This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Happy New Year! This is the first Sunday of the year, isn't it? Yeah. Thanks for braving the winter storms and coming out today. Can you hear in the back? Okay. So I've been thinking for a few weeks about the topic of karma, the Buddha's teaching of karma. And the new year seems like an auspicious time to reflect on our past and start fresh. Sometimes we even speak of purifying karma. At Santa Cruz Zen Center, where I practice on New Year's Eve, we have a fire and we write things from the past years that we want to burn up, and we put it into the fire symbolically. But that's a kind of just a fun sort of ritual. But how do we really purify karma? So we hear about this kind of thing, and the more I started thinking about the teachings of karma, the more I felt like I don't understand, actually. So that's why I started looking into it more and trying to understand what seems like a simple topic, but actually a little bit hard to understand. Especially, the part that I thought is especially kind of hard to understand is when a person does an intentional action, that's what we mean by karma, the effect comes back to that person, the Buddha teaches. But the Buddha also teaches that there's no permanent, independent, separate self. So it seems like almost contradictory, doesn't it? So, but I trust that the Buddha's Dharma is free of contradictions and it's in its heart. So these are some thoughts that looking into the sutras and commentaries about karma that I'll share with you. So, as I just mentioned, karma means intentional action, intentional activity. The Buddha defined karma as intention. So intention's a mental thing. So there's mental karma, which is basically every moment that we have an intention, a mental intention, that's called karma. And then based on the mind's intention, we act through speech and physical actions of the body. So we say, there's body, speech, and mind karma. Speech and action that is based on an intention. Like there might be unintentional actions, like coughing. that was a karmic cough, actually. It was intentional, but sometimes we just cough unintentionally, and that's not considered karma because there's no intention there. But speech, I think, pretty much always comes from some intention. And even to move my hand like this is not that conscious, but I think that's a karmic activity, actually. I think there's some intention to release energy or to make the word, to kind of illustrate the words with emotion or something. So that's karma, is the intentional action. And then karmic effect is the result of that action. And I think it's not so hard for people to understand that our intentional actions of body, speech, and mind have effects on the world and have effects on other people. But harder, I think, sometimes to see how there's always an effect for the so-called person who did the action. So in order to understand this, I think we have to start with understanding what we mean by the person. So a kind of working definition for what we might call a conventional person, maybe even conventional self, not the self that the Buddha's saying is not there, but just our day-to-day unproblematic sense of a person. A working definition is a person is a convenient designation or a convenient name. Person is a word, right? But it's a name for, it's a designation for a causal series of body and mind experiences. I like to, you know, try to come up with concise but really clear and inclusive definitions for different terms or teachings. And this one's really, I think, is working well for me these days. So you can, well, as we explore it, see if you can find problems with this definition. But I think it, for a conventional sense of a person, or even we could say self in quotation marks, a conventional self, or me, is a conventional designation, or a convenient designation. Convenient and conventional are kind of related, actually. Conventional things are kind of convenient. So it's a convenient term for something quite complex, but we're trying to come up with one word for this complex causal series of experiences. So that's why it's convenient to have one word, like person, or self, or I. I is a convenient designation or name for, that stands for, a causal series of body and mind experiences. Sometimes we might think of, well, the self is just a convenient term for this present collection of body and mind experiences. I think that's okay too. But I like the part about causal series because it's not just a momentary thing that now we have a new self that's completely different from the self we had a minute ago. The body and mind experiences from a minute ago are gone, and now we have a new one. That's why this part about causal series is, I think, in accord with our actual experience, that there's some, like, a sense of continuity. There's no essential thing that moves through our body and mind experiences. That's what the Buddha means by there's not a self that's like a thing or entity, a mysterious hidden thread or essence that's running through our body and mind experiences. The Buddha says if we start thinking that way, which we do feel sometimes that there must be something like this, then we have problems. But what if the conventional self doesn't need some sort of thread running through it? It's just a causal series of body and mind experiences. And by causal series, what we mean is that there's a this present body and mind experience that we're all having right now has a cause, you could say, which is the previous moment's body and mind experience, which was caused by the moment before that and the moment before that and so on. And it's not just like in isolation. This body-mind experience is also caused or conditioned by, for example, other people. Like right now, your body and mind experience is also being caused by this body and mind experience that's spewing out these words. But even though there's a lot of things involved, like the rain is a cause for our present body and mind experience too. Which is why some people sometimes say, when I start looking at myself, I just see that it includes everything, actually. Everything in the whole universe is myself. And so in a way, I think that's true, but I like focusing on this causal series because you could say mainly, or just the prominent, dominant cause for our present body and mind experience is another body and mind experience in this causal series. If we just say that I am just the whole universe and you are the whole universe, it's almost like we get all mixed up together. It's not quite like that, right? Like I have memories. This body and mind experience right now has memories from previous body and mind in this causal series. Like I don't have your memories. We might share some memories too, right? But not exactly the same. So the causal series accounts for things like memory and habits. We have different habits, the different causal series, and it accounts for karma, the karmic causality. I think without this understanding of the conventional person being a causal series, then it gets very confusing to talk about the effect coming back to the person. But now we see we have this working definition of person. It's just a name, a convenient name for this causal series of body and mind experiences without the need for any like thread of permanent continuous self in it, or a permanent separate independent self that owns the body and mind experience. We sometimes feel as if, well, really, there's a body and mind experience, and it's my body and mind experience. I own it. But that's the one the Buddha says, if we look for that owner, we don't really find anything but just more body and mind experience that's totally impermanent, constantly changing. Or we sometimes have a sense that our self is like the experiencer of the body and mind experience. The body and mind experiences have some kind of special thing called me that's the experiencer of them. That also might be when we say, this is my pain, my pleasure, my thought, my feeling. We could say, instead of calling that an owner, we could say, I am the experiencer of pains and pleasures and bodies and emotions and so on. But again, this experiencer is some kind of thing. If we look for it, we can't find it. We just find another body and mind experience. Consciousness maybe seems kind of like an experiencer, but that's just another body and mind experience, arising each moment dependent on the previous moment of conceptual consciousness. Can you follow so far? Are you down with this definition of a person? Conventional person. We might say ultimately we can't even find this causal stream, but conventionally it seems that our experience is like this. And my understanding is that the Buddha also can talk about a person like this causal series, a particular causal series that we each have that are interdependent and yet particular and individual causal series. And when the Buddha talks about not self, he's not negating this causal series. I would propose he's negating some sort of owner or experiencer or entity or thing that is like woven into or hidden in, either hidden in the body and mind experience or containing the body and mind experience. That kind of self that would be a permanent, essential, separate self, that we feel like there probably is something like that, but when we look for it, we can't find it. I would say that that's what the Buddha means by not self, is there's no thing like that in addition to the causal series of body and mind experiences. And if we feel like there's something extra, that's the one that the Buddha says causes a lot of suffering, because we feel that's the one that feels, for example, threatened or insulted or offended. That's the separate self that doesn't really exist. Like, how could a causal series of body and mind experiences feel offended? A causal series would feel offense. I mean, maybe this is something we could explore, but I think strong suffering comes from feeling identified with some sort of like entity or owner or experiencer, like an owner of experience. That one could feel threatened or offended. And also, this, if we feel like there's some permanent, essential, separate, singular, independent self that's the owner or experiencer of the causal series, then one of the major threats for that type of self is like old age, sickness, and death, right? We feel like I am going to die, and we don't like that idea. But does the causal series die? According to the Buddha's teaching, if it's a causal series of body and mind experiences, the body is a causal series. Today's body is dependent, caused by yesterday's body and the earlier bodies and so on. So, and at death, that body will continue in a causal series. We're talking about the like a physical body of matter. It will continue in a causal series of being buried in the ground or burned into ashes, and those you know particles of body, conventionally speaking, will continue on. So the body has its own causal series. It's not like going to be a living body after death. But also the mind, consciousness, and mental factors are also a causal series. And that also, the Buddha says, nothing's just cut off. Nothing's annihilated ever. Everything continues in a causal series. So, so that would continue too, and that's the teachings of so-called rebirth. Again, people feel like, well, if the Buddha teaches there's no permanent, ongoing, separate self, then how could there be rebirth? But this is how, right? You could say, what's reborn? Not a self. Some other spiritual traditions would teach that there is a permanent self that's reborn. But the Buddha says there's no permanent essence or owner that's reborn. But you could say the causal series is reborn. The body part is reborn as ashes in the fire, and the mental moments are reborn. They need a body to function as a consciousness. So the mental causal series finds a body, connects with a body, a new body. Right? So does that make sense? It might bring up various questions of how exactly this would work. It brings up questions for me too, but I think it's a nice way of looking at how there can be There can be an ongoing, what we call person, and there can even be so-called rebirth with a causal series of just cause and effect without anything there running through it. And all this is the setup for now looking at karma. So if karma is an intentional action that a body and mind does in this moment, the effect not only affects the world at large or other people, but the effect is an effect in this causal series. So the next moment of the causal series, the effect of that action is still there. And sometimes it comes back right away. Like John Lennon says, right? Instant karma is going to get you. Sometimes, you know, I think especially really like extreme anger is an intentional action of body, speech, and mind. We get really angry and we yell at someone or we hit someone, and then maybe then right afterwards, there's already a really bad feeling for that this causal series. And that causal series, the person who just got hit, yells back at us, and it's even more painful. So I think strong karma, the effects come quickly. But sometimes the effects might not come right away. And then we have this question of, well, then where is it stored? If the karma comes to fruition, you know, years later, where was it in between? So we could just say, it's just the causal series, moment to moment, impermanent causal series of body, mind, and karma. It's not exactly that it's stored. It's ceasing every moment and arising every moment, and it's invisible. It's a mind kind of thing. But one illustration for this, it's still, I think, kind of hard to understand like how this works, but I think one illustration just in the physical world that I think helps me a little bit as an analogy is a river. So a river, much like a person, a river is a convenient designation for a causal series of water. Right? If we look for a river, we can't find some entity called the river. If you look back from an airplane, it looks like there's a thing there. But when you get closer, there's nothing permanent. There's no essential thing. The river, again, is a name. It's a convenient name for a causal series of water that's moving. And if we say, by this one word, river, then we'll start to think that it's something. This is, in fact, same with a person. We say, a person or me, as soon as we name it one thing, we start to feel like it is some separate entity. So language has a lot to do with why we attribute a kind of a self where there isn't one. Because of this convenient one-word thing, it makes it singular, right? So language is part of this. We call it a river, and it seems to then be something, but a river is just a convenient term for a causal series of water moving, like a person. So then we can think of this so-called river is starts interacting with the banks of the river. This part of the water here is moving against the soil at the banks of the river, and it's eroding some of the soil. You could say this is like, it's not actually called karma for a river because there's no intention, but it's somewhat similar to a person's action is relating to the person's world, and it's affecting the world, it's affecting the banks of the river, but it's also affecting the river. Like the soil from the bank is now mixing in with the water, right? There's these soil particles are mixing in with the causal series we call river. And they start flowing with this causal series. There's no thing there. There's no separate entity. It's just a causal series, totally impermanent causal series we're calling river. But now the river is mixed with the effects of this action. Can you follow so far? It's almost like our consciousness or the complexity of our mind is mixed with the effects of our actions. They're kind of, again, not exactly stored. They're running along with this causal series. So the river is getting more and more muddy with these mud particles. And then downstream, maybe way downstream, maybe miles downstream or years downstream in a slowly moving river, the same particles that were eroded upstream now start building up as silt on the bottom of this river downstream. And the effects are now having a stronger effect on that river, on that causal series. And they're building up all this silt, and eventually it maybe even starts blocking the river that last year kind of eroded this soil. So the effects of that action are now coming to be for this causal series we call the river downstream. Yeah? So it's, as an analogy, they always fall a little bit short. Brings up more questions maybe, but I think it points to something like there's no self of a river, and yet the effects are coming to be for that particular causal stream.
And a fish swims
on and on. The fish in the river? And what would that be in this story?
Habit formations. Maybe habit formations. Particular unique personality traits.
Yeah. And a fish, and fish can never leave its element, right? It can never leave the water. So it's like we could also maybe say that the fish could be like it's like the sense of being an individual person never can leave this causal stream. It's never that I start thinking, well, I'm actually that tree over there. No, it always seems connected with this causal series. So that's one story about karmic cause and effect, the effects coming back to the person, and without there being some separate, independent, permanent self. And then we could talk more about karmic purification, but stop here and see if you have questions or thoughts about this. Yeah.
While you were describing this causal series mm-hmm. of a person, the whole time I was thinking about our DNA.
Yeah.
And everything you said about it all mm-hmm. works with DNA. The causal series that is unending life.
Yeah.
Each of us. Back to the beginning. So there is a causal series.
Totally.
Back to the first.
Yeah.
If there was. To billions of years. Billions of years. Whatever. So there's the material thread.
Yeah, yeah.
That is mm-hmm. a causal series that has intent. We are able to mm-hmm. intentionally do things.
Yeah.
With that causal series.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
To manipulate it in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For health or our purity.
Yeah. So it's almost like we could almost say there's three different causal series, or probably a lot more, but we could say the kind of gross physical one, which was the kind of the body that turns into ashes, right? Mm-hmm. There's a more like maybe subtle physical one that's like DNA, mm-hmm. and then there's a mental series too, mm-hmm. and all of those running together. And DNA is a nice example because I don't know that much about DNA, but But I think that the DNA, it is like a physical structure, right, in the brain. But we could say the DNA that we have is not exactly the same DNA as our parents, because otherwise they wouldn't have theirs anymore. But it's closely related to their DNA. So it's not exactly this, like, it's not we took their DNA away. It's like a new DNA dependent on their DNA. But it's not totally different either, because it's like the DNA follows this very, very similar patterning in a family. Family is like a causal series too, right? So
a species,
yeah, with different species of different causal series. Yeah, yeah. So I think it works in many ways, causal series. Mm-hmm. And it's just, a causal series is nothing but cause and effect. There's no, we might even say, there's not really anything that connects the causes and the effects. It's just, when this arises, this comes to be, and it, as soon as this comes to be, this one's ceasing. And like, if we look for what exactly connects them, this is where kind of people like Nagarjuna come in. You can't find like a physical or actual connection where the cause and effect, they don't actually touch. It's very mysterious. We can't actually, when we're looking for right where the cause and the effect meet, it's like a seed and a sprout, exactly. Where does the seed meet the sprout? It doesn't really meet the sprout, the seed is a cause for the sprout. It's very strange. When we look for the actual thing there, we can't find it. And yet, of course, a seed conventionally causes a sprout. Yes? Yeah. So we could add to the story here, and I think this is a nice part of the discussion about self here. And I know some of you have been around, like last summer we were talking about big self or true self, and later Buddhist teachings like Zen starts talking about this true self. And we could say, where does that fit into the story? And so there's some teachings where this true self is like awareness. And I like to distinguish the terms awareness and consciousness. Like, as a consciousness is an impermanent, dualistic consciousness that always arises dependent on an object. That's what dualistic consciousness means. It's dependent on object. And that consciousness is impermanent every moment. So that's part of when I say causal series of body and mind. That mind is impermanent and arising dependent on conditions. So we could call that dualistic consciousness or dualistic mind. And then there's non-dual awareness, you could say, is not dependent on anything. That's like ever-present. It's not exactly the self, although this gets a little tricky because some people say, isn't that the self that the Buddha refuted? But I would say the self the Buddha refuted is this, it's a separate, independent, permanent entity. This kind of self of boundless, unborn awareness is not an entity, it's not a thing, and it's not separate. In other words, it's not like I have one of them and you have one of them. As my understanding of this true self would be like, it's almost a universal. And it's empty of any graspable qualities, and yet it's always present. And I would say that's the one that is actually just knows all experiences of the body and mind in the causal series, but knows them not as objects, but knows them as itself. That's why we call it non-dual awareness. So a metaphor for this is we have the conventional person, the conventional self, again, is the causal series of body and mind experiences. The false self is that there's some owner or experiencer of that causal series. That's the one the Buddha says. There's not that self. And then we have the true self that's like a boundless mirror. And on this boundless, clear, empty mirror appears the causal series of body and mind experiences. And you could say, so all three of those selves are like part of the same story. This might be a little bit tricky to see. The boundless mirror, but I'm not talking about something abstract, I'm talking about our awareness right now is like a boundless mirror. And actually we could say that's who we really are. And who, you know, on this mirror is reflected a body and mind experience right now, like the sound of the rain and the feeling in the body and the thoughts and the emotions are all like reflections on this mirror, inseparable from the mirror. But the mirror is an unchanging, ever-present, ungraspable reality. And all this changing stuff is appearing, just like reflections on the mirror keep changing, but the mirror doesn't change. Right? So you could say, the person that we are calling the causal series of body and mind experiences, that person is a reflection on this on the mirror.
Just a quick follow-up. So the causal, does it mean that the causal effect of increasing awareness of oneself and just being in the present moment and, you know, focusing, does that lead to a path where you just become that mirror, where you just...
You know, maybe we could say, since we already are this mirror, unavoidably we all are. And even you said, you know, humans are can be more aware of, I think when you say conscious of consciousness, I picked up on that. Maybe that's being the mirror and knowing that you are the mirror, right? And I'd say even animals, you know, their true self is this mirror too, but they're so into the objects. And people too, we're so into the body and mind experiences. We're so into the causal series we call the person that we don't even notice that, well, who's aware of this person? And yeah, by being more and more present and by hearing such teachings, which sound kind of strange, I mean, there's something, this almost sounds like there is something other than the body and mind causal series called awareness, but it's not really other than it either. That's why it gets really hard to talk about this. But it's like, it is that which is always aware of that. And then we can hear that and we can then look back. We are the mirror already, but the body and mind person can actually start questioning who is aware now. We look back and there's we can discover this, yeah, in stillness and silence and investigation.
I would just add that persona, as a Greek word, means mask. Mm. That's very well into what you're describing. Mm.
So that would be this causal series is kind of like a reflection on the mirror. It's kind of like a mask on the mirror.
I would just say that self is a mask.
Mm. So remember, we have in this story now we have three types of self. This is, I think, a nice one to, you know, a nice story to try to get. Is that there's the conventional self is a convenient name for a causal series of body and mind experiences. That's the conventional self. The Buddha says it's not a problem. And it's, in fact, a good thing because this is the one where it's good to brush our teeth today because then we won't get cavities tomorrow. It's good to be into this conventional self. There's this permanent, essential, separate self that's like some owner or experience. That's the false one that's never really helpful. There's that. So there's two selves. And then we're added in this true self that's like the boundless mirror on which both of the other two are actually appearing. This one's appearing as a totally illusory reflection, and this one's appearing as a conventionally helpful reflection. And then, but they're both just reflections, changing reflections on this unchanging mirror. And then for the mask, I guess we could say it could be either of these two, right? It could be the false self. It could be like a mask. But even from the perspective of the true self, we could say even the conventional self is a little bit like a mask. From the mirror's perspective.
Yeah. If we said that the self is whatever believes it's separate,
mm-hmm.
true self.
Yeah, that would be, I think, this one, another way of talking about this separate one is actually, we could even define this false illusion of a separate self, is the belief that it is separate from the body and mind series. Yeah, that's the one we can, by investigating, we can see through it. And yeah, that one can drop away. But interestingly, I'd say these two maybe don't drop away. Some might argue that for a Buddha, this appearing one disappears. So there might be some stories that say they're only the mirror. But I think it's nice to talk about, these are like the two truths, the conventional truth and the ultimate truth. And they're actually, they always go along together. The appearances, the reflections on the mirror are always there with the mirror. And they're inseparable, and yet the reflections are always changing in a causal series, and the mirror is unchanging. Yeah. So the so in Zazen we start attending to the breath, which is a sensation in the body, and to the posture, which is bodily sensation. So in some ways we could say what we mean experientially in Zazen, what we mean by body is, when we start looking at it, it's the body is sensation. I mean, we might have ideas of the body, but that's not what we're dealing with in Zazen, right? We're putting aside the ideas and just feeling the physical sensations. But interestingly, what we mean by physical sensation is actually an experience in the mind too, right? So, but we pay attention to this particular, it's not a thought. And the nice thing about the body and the breath is they take us out of the realm of conceptual thought and bring us more into this sensation realm. What is a feeling or sensation in the body? Like, what is the feeling of our bottom on the cushion? What is the feeling of breath? The more we attend to it, the more mysterious it becomes. And but it's also very grounding. I think because, and maybe this is what you're emphasizing, because it's not so conceptual, right? It's a direct experience of what we call sensation. And then the more and more we open to it, the more and more we settle down into our more direct experience, more and more present and direct, less conceptual, less of our thinking mind. And then the more we settle into the present, the more we start opening to this deeper dimension where these sensations of we call body and breath are like expressions of this boundless mirror-like awareness. So they're not separate from it. You know, the body, not as an idea, but the body as an experience is fused with the mirror of awareness. It's not exactly that the body's distorting the awareness. The body is the awareness manifesting as what we call sensation. Does that make sense? Yeah, and I think it's helpful in Zazen. But if we just stay with this is me and my body and it's a physical solid thing, then I think actually that's a little bit of a conceptual idea. In our direct experience of body, we start to see it's just an ungraspable reflection. And that's actually the body. I feel like when the more I open to the sensations we call body as this ungraspable reflection, the body actually relaxes more. Zazen becomes more joyful the more we actually can't get a hold of the so-called body. So maybe we'll leave karmic purification for another day, because it's kind of a big topic. of, you know, confession and repentance for past karma as a person, as a conventional person, is lessens the painful effects of harmful karma, and rejoicing in wholesome, beneficial karma increases the effects of good karma. That's one conventional teaching. And then the final purification is something more like being the mirror and understanding that karma is like a reflection. But that would take a while to unpack all of that. So merit, we call merit, is the result, really merit defined by the Buddha, is the result of wholesome karma. That's what it is. We could call that like open-heartedness. And so any kind of open-heartedness and open-mindedness that's arisen here from the karma of our discussion, we offer it. We include all beings in the universe in this open-heartedness. May they be happy and free.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.